The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks starts now.
Weekend Wager. We're here to help you win some money this weekend. Get it? Brought to you by BetMGM. Believe in your bet. Believe in your game. BetMGM Sports. Without further ado, John Mascari joins me here, head pro at Alpine Country Club. John, how you doing?
Good. Hi, Anita. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm hanging in there. I'm doing better than Tiger, that's for sure.
Oh, man. Skin of his teeth, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, really... did he start on 1 or 10 today? I'm just because it was that like that last putt.
He started on the back nine, so he finished on 9 today.
There we go. So that putt on 9 really sealed the deal for him, and so at +3, he just made the cut. Which, by the way, it feels weird, right? I feel like, you know, what is this, the 6th tournament that these dudes are playing in since the pandemic pause? And I feel like the cut line the last few weeks has been like -3, -4, and today it's +3. It just goes to show you how difficult this course is this weekend.
Yeah, we knew coming in that it certainly wouldn't be the same golf course we saw the week before for the workday. You know, we spoke to Larry from Muirfield, and he mentioned how much more faster the greens are going to be, but especially the rough. And you saw guys struggling when they missed the fairways. And that'll certainly make it very easy to make a high number.
I'm sure. All right. So let's, John, let's take a look at the leaderboard right now, where it stands heading into this weekend, and try to help people win some money here. Ryan Palmer is at the top leaderboard with Tony Finau at 9 under. Now, and for folks who don't know, John and I and Christina Thompson from Golf for Her, we have a golf podcast. We record it every Tuesday night. It posts to our 98.7 ESPN website every Wednesday morning. Thank you, Jeff Scopin, who produces it and puts it up for us. Appreciate you, my friend. And we talked about Tony Finau on our golf podcast this week. He took last week off, and he really worked on his driving game. And he was crushing it. And there was a video that went viral, kind of like, oh, DeChambeau, whatever you can do, I can do better. What have you seen from Tony Finau the past 2 days that is helping him be at the top of the leaderboard heading into this weekend?
I would say accuracy off the tee is the most important thing. As we said, the rough is so thick at Muirfield right now. He's driving it long, but very accurate. His putter is certainly heated up as well. Great round of 3 under today to be a 9 under for the tournament coming into the weekend. And I think, you know, if you look down the leaderboard, one of the guys that I was really high on was Jon Rahm. So here's the #2 player in the world. Kind of got the short end of the stick with the preferred pairings going into this tournament, and here he is sitting alone in third after a 5 under round, second round today, sitting 1 shot back. Really a strong leaderboard, but a kind of a leaderboard that's, if you look at it as a whole, a little bit all over the place, would you say? We got Victor Hovland, who's been playing great, shot 6 under, but hey, Jim Furyk, Steve Stricker in the mix, come on.
So a few things going into Wednesday. I picked Jon Rahm to not even make the cut. And by the way, he's 8 under, so he's 1 shot back of the lead. You know, first of all, this is only the second time he's played at Memorial. The first time he played, he didn't make the cut. And his game has not looked good at all. So what was it about Jon Rahm coming into this that you felt you would see something different?
I just felt he was kind of disrespected. Like, no one's talking about this guy. Even though, to your point, he's not playing the best golf he can be, he's still one of the elite players in the world. And they're just kind of brushing him off to the side. And I love to see, he's a very competitive person, the competitive Spaniard. And this was an opportunity for him to say, hey, I'm over here. And boom, he's 1 shot back. And expect some great things for him through the weekend as well.
Gary Woodland is a guy that I was high on coming into this tournament, he's 6 under, so he's 3 shots back, and he's tied for 4th with, is it Chez Reavie? Am I pronouncing that properly?
Exactly,
Chez
right.
Reavie. Chez is a guy that I did some research, and I really liked coming into this tournament. I think I put some money down on him that he was going to finish in the top 40, but sure enough, he's sitting here tied for 4th, so that's not half bad. But in regard to guy, all right. So let me ask you this, John. Again, John Mascari joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, head pro at Alpine Country Club, and does the On the Tee podcast with me. So heading into this weekend, so Ryan Palmer's 9 under. So realistically, how far down do you feel like Cantlay, for example, at 4 under? Realistically, how far down do you look at guys that you think could possibly still win this with 9 being at the top of the leaderboard? How far down should we look?
I'd go even lower than that. I'd probably look 3 under, maybe. I mean, it could turn on a dime at Muirfield. Someone gets a hot putter. The conditions are going to be, it's going to be a little hotter, but 6 shots is, with 2 rounds to go, is certainly in the mix.
Okay, so with that being said, I'm going to give you the odds. You said you really like John Rahm. John Rahm right now is favored to win this at plus 250.
Okay.
Okay. I like Woodland. I like Gary Woodland, who is, he's 3 shots back, and his odds are 10-1 to win this.
Okay.
Okay. Jim Furyk, I don't think Jim Furyk's going to win it. But here's the thing. Jim Furyk is tied for 8th. You could get Jim Furyk. Here we go. You could get Jim Furyk to win this 80-1. Jim Furyk to finish in the top 5, 8-1. Jim Furyk to finish in the top 10, 3-1. Hey, listen, 3-1 for Jim Furyk to finish in the top 10, the way that he's playing, I'm down for that. I loved his metrics coming into this. Chez to win this 20-1. Do you think Chez has a shot? Chez is 6 under. He's 3 shots back.
Just 5 under today. You want to talk about going into the weekend with confidence? Certainly keep an eye on him. Absolutely.
So, and here's another one for you. What about Patrick Cantlay? Now, this is a guy that I was pretty big on heading into this tournament as well. He is 4 under, so he's 5 shots back. You can get him to win at 12-1, to finish in the top 5 at plus 175, to finish in the top 10 at minus 137.
I'm not as high on him as I used to be. I know you're a huge supporter of his. You've been on
a huge supporter.
Yeah, I mean, like, he pretty much bought your scooter for you, right?
Pretty much. So, even though it is orange, and I call it the Ricky Fowler scooter, he keeps on wetting the bed. What's up with that, too?
I don't know what his deal is, but yeah, you know, Patrick,
he got
Cantlay,
married. That's what the deal is. He got married.
No comment. My wife is probably listening.
Julie,
Patrick Cantlay, ho hum. You know, first 2 rounds of 2 under each. I can't believe you haven't mentioned Victor Hovland, who shot 6 under today.
Hovland shot 6 under. He's 4 under, so he's 5 shots back. You could get him at 16-1 to win, plus 275 to finish in the top 5, and minus 110 to finish in the top 10. How are you playing that? He's tied for 8th right now.
I'm going to win and then top 5. I don't think the odds are good enough for the top 10, but it's certainly worth a couple of shekels for the other ones. I mean, if he fires another round of 6 under, yeah, and he's, again, another guy who's just oozing confidence right now, playing great golf.
Again, John Mascari joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, talking about some of the odds out there to help you win some money this weekend at the Memorial. I'm going all the way to the bottom of the leaderboard, right? And the dudes who just made the cut at plus 3. So now you've got a lot of guys who are like tied for 64th, right? Now, you know, one of the bets out there is that you can bet that a player is going to finish in the top 40. Okay. And so guys that are tied for 64th or plus 3, and so they're like 2 shots back from potentially finishing in the top 40. And I'm going to rattle off some names. Like, for example, I loved Schauffele coming into this tournament. He's at plus 3. I also liked Answer coming into this tournament. He's at plus 3. Now, I'm not anticipating that you're going to get great odds with these two guys, but you know, have you seen anything in their game the past 2 days that makes you think that that they will maybe turn it around on Saturday and Sunday and at least finish in the top 40?
Let's be honest, they're in that position for a reason on the leaderboard. So they haven't had very many shining moments for the first 2 days. But what I look at is for guys who are kind of tournament tested. You know what? They get into the cut. They have that second gear that would say, hey, let's go try to climb up the leaderboard and cash a decent check this weekend. Answer is a fantastic example of that. Guy who has having a great season, kind of flew under the radar to start things off, but you see his name constantly on the leaderboard. Certainly, I think he would finish in the top 40. Same thing to your point before with Xander Schauffele, another guy who's not afraid of the spotlight. And he kind of sneaks under the radar again, and who knows, puts up a quick 4 or 5 under in the third round and creeps his way up the leaderboard as guys start to fall back.
Brooks Koepka is at +3 as well.
Right on the number, Brooksy, right? Man.
And what are your thoughts? Your thoughts on I'm burying the lead here, right? Like Tiger Woods +3. He was +4 on the day today. You know, I was listening to some commentators who said the quick turnaround time for him. Last night they were talking about the quick turnaround time. They didn't know what to expect from him today, and obviously today at +4. Do you think that is a huge issue for Tiger now at his age and all the ailments that he has to go through? And from what I understand, like his routine before he plays, it's like a 3-hour routine. Can you imagine?
No.
I pull up to the club.
I mean, right. We're on the tee. That's why the show is called On the Tee.
I pull up to the club.
Hey,
like,
we're on the tee. Let's go.
I know. I pull up to the club. I'm racing to get my shoes on, and I don't even go to the range, which is just foolish on my part, especially since I play for money every time I tee it up. It's just stupid on my part. But that's a whole nother story for a whole nother show. But thoughts on what you saw from Tiger Woods today? And again, he's tied for 64th. Are you putting any money on Tiger Woods this weekend?
No, I don't think I'm touching Tiger right now. It's, you know, one of the things I was questioning was, why wouldn't he have come out the week before and taken a stab at Muirfield just to kind of get the engine going again? This way, when he hits the Memorial, he's kind of at maximum speed. And you look at his round, you know, he played okay in round one, up and down, but this kind of came out with a weird – it started off okay, hit a great flop shot on one, saved par, reached the par 5 11th. You know, he started on the back nine, so his second hole was the 11th, but then a three-putt. Come on. I mean, how many times do you see Tiger three-putt? And then he does it again on 13. So now we're talking about, whoa, he's fighting it seems. So I think he's still battling with himself. Listen, he had to make birdie on 2 of the last 3 holes to get in on the number. Think about that. He hasn't missed a cut at the Memorial in 17 years, and he had to fight to get it on the number. So, you know, you might see peaks and valleys from him this weekend, but I really wouldn't expect much from Tiger other than just trying to get back, for lack of a better word, into the swing of things.
Hey, John, before I let you go, I thought it was interesting. You know, we've been having so much fun with DeChambeau and the fact that he's driving the ball 400 and what he drove the ball 425 yards.
Yeah.
On Thursday. But, you know, Jack came out. Obviously, this is Jack's tournament. And Jack came out and said, enough already. Fix it. You got to fix it. Just fix the damn ball, for God's sake. I mean, does the ball need fixing? Like, do you really think it's the ball?
So you know, this has been something that Jack has been talking about for years and years and years, about, you know, the ability for these golfers who hit the ball further and further, but we can't make the golf courses really any longer, right? Listen, people love seeing the long ball, right? People love to see a guy pound it 425. People love to, how great it is to see someone hit a par 5 and 2. Who didn't like it when Tiger was bringing a course to its knees, right? But maybe we're getting to a point now where it's becoming, you hate to use the term, but it's becoming a joke, right? So looking at DeChambeau, where he's talking about how he'd play Augusta's 13th hole, he said he'd hit it down the 14th hole because it's the best angle to come in at. And that's not even an option for the field, but he could just overpower these golf courses. And I think there has to be a little bit of a middle ground to this. I don't think it's a bad idea to look at the ball for the tour players. Okay. We're not asking you to rip it back to 210 yards off the tee. That's boring. But think about all the other sports where you know, the Major League Baseball players, they don't use the metal bats that they use in college. They use the wood bats because they would hit it out of the stadium. Look at the NHL when scoring was not very high and they made the goalie pads smaller. But what's going to happen is eventually there will be evolution and you can't stop progression and you can dial the ball back to 250 and then 5 years from now, some young kid's going to come and he's going to hit it 300. And then 5 years after that, another, he's going to hit it 320. They're going to figure out a way to keep on doing it. But in the meantime, I don't think it's a bad way to go. Listen, we can't make these classic golf courses any longer, okay? We got to go the other direction. Let's make the equipment kind of throttle back for these guys. Not for you and me, but for the guys on tour. Because, Anita, we all know you. We love the long ball.
Yeah, I'm having a problem with it though. The last four times I've played, I come in. I'm really optimistic. I'm like, my driver's going to be my friend today, and then all of a sudden I'm driving the ball further with my 3-wood than I am my driver, and the driver ends up in my bag. So actually, I need a lesson, dude.
All right, I'll see if I know anyone who can give you a lesson.
I need I need a 30-minute lesson or 20-minute lesson with my driver. Something's up. Something's horribly wrong.
No one will outdrive you anymore. That'll be it. That'll be the end of
John,
that.
Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Big kiss to Julie and the kids for me. Have a great weekend.
You as well. Thanks for letting me come on. Appreciate it.
You got it. John Mascari joining us, head pro at Alpine Country Club.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, Rob Masiello joins me here on 98.7 ESPN for Weekend Wager. Not a lot going on, Rob, in our wide, wide world of sport right now to wager on. Obviously, golf, which I just discussed.
Did you have Bryson today? Was that 10 spot he threw up?
I did not. But you know what? Hey, listen, I'm very honest, and I had John Rahm to not make the cut at plus 300, and there's a chance this dude just wins it.
Yeah, he's playing well. I saw where did he finish at? I know he was was watching him a little bit this morning. I saw him at like 5 or 6 under.
So, yeah, he's towards the top of the leaderboard. I want to say, hold on, I'll tell you right now. I was just talking about it with John. He's 8 under, so he's one shot back. So we'll see what happens. But boy, am I eating crow.
But that's a plus 300 bet. See, if you're going to be in the racing, I got to tell you, like, that's racing is all about betting 10 to 1 shots that you know, don't fire. But when you're betting plus 300, you know, you're going to lose more than you win. But, you know, when you win, it makes up for the losers. Right?
That's for sure.
That's how you have to look at it.
So Rob, why don't we, like I was saying, there's really not a lot going on yet, right? Like, soon there will be. I want to say, like, I know, right? Your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah.
So I saw, like, on August 1st, the lineup in regard to the number of NBA, Major League Baseball, and hockey games is ridiculous. Like, you know, talk about people not leaving their homes again, because there's going to be so much sports on, it's going to be ridiculous. So we're almost there, but right now it's golf and Monmouth this weekend, tomorrow the Haskell Stakes. We're going to break down that race. Is Monmouth going to have some fans? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, they do. So they're keeping a hard cap on it, but they do have, I think it's like 5,000. I know they had talked about 20,000. I have to say, so I'm a big Saratoga guy. I go up to Saratoga every summer. I know we've golfed at Saratoga National in the past. I love Saratoga. Saratoga is not doing fans this summer, and I understand why they're making the decision. I agree with it, but it's been really, honestly for me, it's actually been really sad to watch racing up there the last 2 days because there's no fans, and Saratoga is such a vibrant community, and especially when the meet gets going, it's just, I know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been up there at some point, and it's just such a fun atmosphere, and the town's amazing, and the track is within walking distance of the downtown area, and it's just such a fun area to go to. So it's been sad to watch that a little bit, but Monmouth does have fans. I know that you, if you're looking to go tomorrow, I think you had to have purchased tickets at this point. I don't know if there's anything online where you, or if there's like a StubHub type scenario, but they are having limited fans there tomorrow. So it's good. It gets that. You know, I think one of the things I've really realized this year, Anita, I don't know how you feel about this, is, but, you know, a lot of sports is about the atmosphere. It's about, you know, whether you're going to the Derby or going to a Rangers game or a Yankees game or a Knicks game or whatever. It's about being with the crowd. And, you know, it's really, I think this year's kind of put that in perspective of how important that is. And so much of sports is having that, like, atmosphere. And that's just not been there this year, obviously, with anything since March.
No, that's for sure. All right. Well, you know, again, a majority of people will be watching it either on the internet or on television and be able to wager from home. So what I want to do is I want to break down three races tomorrow. The 10th, the 11th, and the Haskell Stakes is the 12th race. So the 10th race is the Monmouth Cup. And so I'm sure you have all that in front of you. Just out of curiosity, I know Bal Harbour is getting a lot of love. Who do you like in this race?
Yeah, you know, so it's funny. I saw your, and again, to give it a shout out again this week. I love what you're doing with Ashley. I think it's awesome on the live stream that you're doing with her, the Betting After Dark. But I know she was a big Bal Harbour fan. I'm actually also a Bal Harbour fan. I like him. He's coming. It's his first race back as a 5-year-old, and he's just been in the deep end of the pool. He ran against Maximum Security in the Cigar Mile in his last race. And the Cigar Mile is like a very, very, you know, it's a race probably not a lot of people know about, but it's a very, very important race. It's sort of like closing day in New York for the big races. Kind of after Cigar Mile Day, it turns into just like the winter slog until you get into the Wood Memorial in the spring. But they actually in recent years, they moved the Cigar Mile back a week to kind of turn it into like a last shot race after the Breeders' Cup races in early November. So it drew Maximum Security last year. He didn't run particularly well that day, Bal Harbour, but you know he's run very, very good races. He got beat ahead in this race last year to War Story, and he's just been keeping very good company as a 4-year-old. You never know. One of the interesting things about these horses is he's coming off of basically 7-month layoff, so you never know, you know, if he's going to come back and be that same horse that he was last year. But if he is, he would fit very well. And at 7-2, I think he's definitely worth a shot as a win bet.
So how are you going to play this race?
You know, I'm going to play him to win. I'm a little bit interested in the 2 and the 3 horse who are, you know, one's trained by Chad Brown. I know you tried to pronounce this horse's name yesterday. I can't pronounce it either. I think it's Monongahela. I think it's a.
Monongahela.
Yeah, I think that's Hawaiian. One of the Hawaiian kings, if I'm not mistaken. I might be totally wrong about that. The other is Senior Investment. Can pronounce that name. That's the 3 horse.
Of course you can. It's what you do for a living.
I can do that. Both horses that ran very successfully in the Mid-Atlantic last year and into early this year before Corona hit. Came back, both of them ran in the Westchester Stakes, which was a very loaded race. It was won by a horse by the name of Kota Honor, who's probably one of the best older horses in the country right now. Neither of them really ran a step, but that track was muddy that day. So again, that's sort of the other side of the coin of, you know, two horses that both shown pretty good form last year, came back off a long layoff, didn't really run particularly well, but is it just because they're not the same horse that they were last year? Is it because they needed a race? Is it because the track was muddy that day? You know, that's sort of the essence of what handicapping is. But they're, you know, I'd say of the two, Senior Investment is 10-1 on the morning line. You know, if he's 10-1, I would probably have a couple of bucks on him. But I'm definitely in the Bal Harbour camp. I'm excited to see what he can do this year as a 5-year-old.
All right, the next race number 11 at Monmouth Park is the United Nations Stakes. Now, you and I spoke, we didn't speak, but we text back and forth, and one thing that you said that you really loved about this race is it's really, really wide open, and you called it fun.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's
so,
a race.
So what's okay, so fun about this race?
I like the turf marathon races, which United Nations is one of. Just because these races to me are very tactical. You know, you're not going to see, you know, whereas you take a dirt sprint, for example, a 6-furlong race on the dirt, it's sort of who can run the fastest, you know, and just keep going. These sort of races, they're a lot more tactical in terms of, you know, what's the early pace going to be like? Where do you put horses? It's a three-turn race, so saving ground becomes vital. But at the same time, you don't want to leave too much to do. And, you know, when you're going that long, sometimes it can kind of thwart the late kick of a closer. You know, ironically, sometimes closers, they're are better at kind of middle distance races because they got a lot of pace to run into. Whereas these marathon races, if the pace is kind of slow, you know, it's hard for them to have that big kick in the last quarter mile when they turn for home. So it's a fun race. There's no real standout. I would say kind of the horse that has had the best career, actually our mutual friend Ray Bryan owns, I think, a piece of this horse, is Arklow. He's on the rail, Donegal Racing horse. He's just been a very consistent turf horse over his career. He's run a lot of good races. He won a grade one back in October in the Turf Classic. You know, so he's probably sort of the horse that, you know, on credentials is the horse to beat. I don't think we talked about this race a little bit. There's not a lot of a pace in this race. And Arklow is a horse that's done his best running from a little bit off the pace. So I'm just not sure how well this horse, the race is going to set up for him. I landed on Perrette, who's an Australian-bred horse. He drew outside for James Lawrence. I think he's a horse that, you know, again, we just said that there's, you know, it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of pace in this race. And at 6-1, you know, he's a horse that's going to be out in front and a horse that's probably going to control this race. You know, I just think he's a horse that kind of fits in here. He's run well enough. He won a listed stake called the Tiller, which was June 4th. Now, we talked a little bit texting about how listed stakes aren't really as good as graded stakes. But in this case, just based on everything that's happened this year, obviously racing New York was shut down for all of April and May and part of March. And so this Tiller stake, even though it's a listed stake, it ended up actually being a very strong race, I think. It drew Saddler's Joy ran third that day. Saddler's Joy is a very, very good turf horse. So even though it's a listed stake, he really kind of won like a grade two type race that day. And I think he's going to get a similar setup today where he's, you know, he's going to be in front and kind of be able to control the race with moderate fractions. And, you know, I just think he's going to be tough.
Rob Masiello joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Monmouth, a lot of races happening there tomorrow. And the big race is the Haskell Stakes. Big race, why? Winning, you're in. The amount of points that whoever does win will elevate them into the Kentucky Derby. Now, Dr. Post is a horse that that is racing in this race. And I know you really liked him a lot in the Belmont. Are you high on him again tomorrow in the Haskell?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm, you know, I'm a little biased. I'm good friends with the owner. You know, actually, Vinny is one of the guys that is bidding on the Mets with he's a part of the Alex Rodriguez crew, and he's just
really?
Yeah, he's a dream of a guy. He grew up, you know, very working class in Brooklyn, and went to West Point. You know, built his own business, and he's just such a sweet guy. He's one of the nicest people I've ever met, and just a really, really easy person to root for in life. But anyways, besides that, I do actually also really, I'm a little biased, but I do also really like his horse. He's a horse that, from his debut last year, I actually had a horse that ran against him in his debut on 4th of July last year, and, you know, just looking at him physically, he always struck me as a horse that just was going to turn into a really nice three-year-old. He was just a big, kind of typical of a stallion quality road type horse. And he got injured out of that race. He came back as a three-year-old and has just been really impressive. Thought he ran well in the Belmont. The race just didn't set up for him. We talked a month ago about how dominant Tislaw was, and I didn't think Tislaw was going to get beat, but I thought if he did, it would be Dr. Post. And Dr. Post ran an admirable race in defeat. He just wasn't quite good enough. And, you know, I thought that Tislaw kind of had a little bit of a better trip that day, but he's coming back here in the Haskell. I think he's going to be the second choice to Authentic. But I've been impressed with him, and I think he's going to have a lot of pace to run into tomorrow in the Haskell, and I think it'll just set up well for him.
Last thing for you, really quick. I know that there's five jockeys that I believe have tested positive to COVID-19 in Del Mar out in California. And so they've suspended racing out there. Any of those jockeys slated to ride any of these horses that obviously they won't be able to, have any concerns for you? Is that a story that's coming into tomorrow that's going to affect Monmouth in these races?
Yeah. So I mean, the big thing I guess is that Mike Smith was scheduled to come out, but I don't believe that's the case as of today. So I think that. I'm not totally sure what's kind of going to happen with that. But, yeah, so there was a pretty big outbreak. Apparently one of the valets got, who's kind of like the works for the jockeys, got sick and ended up spreading it throughout the room in Los Alamitos, which was kind of the meet that's before Del Mar. And unfortunately, I think 15 of the jockeys got sick and have corona. So, again, kind of sign of the times, probably not safe for Mike to be traveling across country. Obviously, this is a very big day. You know, the Haskell is one of the biggest races for three-year-olds of the year. It's sort of the race that I would say a lot of the three-year-old colts kind of point to once the, you know, especially Derby, Preakness. You know, if you don't think your horse is going to fit in the Belmont, you know, you see a lot of these trainers will kind of back off their colt for a little bit and kind of prep them for the Haskell and then the Travers, which is typically moved up similar to the Haskell, but is typically the weekend before the before Labor Day. This year, everything's moved up a little bit just to kind of fit into a schedule with the Kentucky Derby now being on Labor Day. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely an issue. You know, Mike is obviously, especially because he comes out really to ride for Bob Baffert, who typically does very well when he ships east. So that's a concern, but, you know, again, you have guys like Paco Lopez and some other guys that have always ridden really well at Monmouth and know the track well. So I don't think it'll make a huge, huge difference, but it's, you know, it's just one of those things that it kind of sucks, honestly, and it's part of what this year is all about. So,
Rob, thank you so much. Always appreciate your time and your insight, and enjoy the races tomorrow, my friend.
Great. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
You got it. Rob Masiello joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. So there you have it. Giving you a lot of information with golf, a lot of information with the horses at Monmouth tomorrow. So just send the 10% to Anita Marks at ESPN. Right? No, I'm kidding.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.